Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Lord Krishna's Entrance into Dwarka, text number 6. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The citizen said, O Lord, you are worshipped by all demigods like Brahma, the four sunas, and even the King of Heaven. You are the ultimate rest for those who are really aspiring to achieve the highest benefit of life. You are the supreme transcendental Lord, and inevitable time cannot exert its influence upon you. Purport. The Supreme Lord is Shri Krishna, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Samhita, and other authorized Vedic literatures. No one is equal to or greater than him, and that is the verdict of all scriptures. The influence of time and space is exerted upon dependent living entities for all parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. The living entities are predominated Brahman, whereas the Supreme Lord is the predominating Absolute. As soon as we forget this clear fact, we are at once an illusion, and thus we are put into the threefold miseries, as one is put into dense darkness. The clear consciousness of the cognizant living being is God consciousness, in which one bows down unto him in all circumstances. Mong Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthabhute Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminte Namane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vajarne Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya Desitarne. So in this verse and purport is not different from the other verses and purports. Here it explains again, or states, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is known as the primary verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhaktarik. Ete changsa kalapumusam, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Svayam. Indriyani vyakalam lokam ridayanti yuge yuge. So how many devotees know this verse? How many know the translation to the verse? Ete changsa, ete iti, or ete chang cha angsa. Cha angsa, what does angsa mean? Part, yes, part. Ete changsa kala, what does kala mean? No, another part. That's kala. This is kala. Angsa, part of a part. Ete changsa kala pumsam, pumsam, person, or living entity, an individual, supreme person. Ete changsa kala pumsam Krishnas. Who? Krishnas? Krishna. To Bhagavan Swayam. So Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. So the parts and the particles of Krishna, they've been explained before, but Krishna, too, means but. Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. Indriyani vyakulam lokam mridayanti yuge yuge. So previously, there are many incarnations that have been explained, but Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all the expansions come from Him. So this has been explained by our acharyas that ete changsa. So the generally, if Krishna was the particle of the, or an expansion of the, of Narayan, then first of all, it would have stated what's known first. Generally, first you state what's known, and then you state what's unknown. So, it is known, these other expansions, but where they're coming from was not known. So it is stated, ete changsa kala pumsam Krishnas tu Bhagavan Swayam. That Krishna, who's the unknown in this formula, he's the Bhagavan Swayam. He's the original personality of Godhead, from which all the expansions come from. So this may seem to us quite obvious, but that's because we generally associate with everyone else who accepts this as simply obvious. But if we had the if we associated with people who knew the Vedic literature, they might be able to easily bewilder us by just pointing out their own grammatical interpretations of this verse. That your spiritual master, he's had you blindly accept that this cowherd boy is God, while actually Narayan is God. Because we don't even know on what basis we're accepting Krishna as God. We have faith. But generally our faith, even in the Krishna consciousness movement, is partially blind faith. Blind faith in this sense, we don't really know why we're accepting Krishna as God. And therefore, we accept it because everyone else is. Just like they had this famous story that one time one ass died. Gargofield or someone, I forget his name. And so the washerman shaved his head. And then people started to ask the washerman, why have you shaved your head? So he said, because Gargofield has died. So people thought that they didn't want to question him who Gargofield is, because they figured that he must be an important person. And therefore, without question, they simply all shaved their heads in honor of Gargofield. And then the mayor, the police constable in the town, saw everyone had a shaven head, and he was asking, who are you mourning for? And they said, don't you know, Gargofield has died. So they also shaved their head. He also shaved his head. And the mayor did similarly. The governor did the same thing. The king did the same thing. And finally, throughout the whole kingdom, everyone had a shaven head. And so the emperor inquired, why has everyone shaved their heads? And they said, haven't you heard? Gargofield has died. So the king said, who's Gargofield? And so an investigation was made, and it was found out that he was an ass. So similarly, without understanding things more deeply, just by blindly accepting, one can easily be bewildered by apparent contradictions, or by if someone brings up some arguments which one is not familiar with, then one can easily become confused. Therefore, to understand how Krishna is God is more important than just to blindly accept the fact that he is God. Especially in this modern world, people are quite skeptical, and therefore they're always willing to take pleasure in bewildering people's convictions. So, it is mentioned by our acharyas, the proofs, for instance, in the Tattvasandarbha, there is an explanation given why we accept Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's called epistemology. Of course, most of us probably didn't like philosophy in school, and we don't like philosophy in Krishna consciousness either that much. But the fact is that without understanding how we have faith or accept something, we don't know why we accept anything, therefore we can easily reject something. So in Tattvasandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami points out that there are 10 sources of evidence that are generally accepted by people. For instance, even within our society, we accept historical evidence, which is one kind of pramana, or evidence. We accept tradition, we accept direct perception, we accept logical inference, and to some extent, there's some acceptance of Shabda Praman. Although that's not very strong, because most people are not familiar with any kind of authentic scripture that actually is absolute enough to be applicable in all time for all circumstances. even people accept the Bible or some other scripture, generally they do so at the cost of all reasoning and common sense. But of the ten types of pramanas or evidences, then there are three major ones, namely pradyaksha, anuman, and shabda pramana. So pradyaksha means direct perception. Everyone has some faith in their direct perception, but as we all know that we have four defects, and therefore direct perception in and of itself is not sufficient evidence to establish the absolute truth. And even reasoning based upon direct perception, either extended or limited direct perceptions, even we can look out through a telescope and further our direct perception by the use of our senses, but still that's not ultimately because an absolute perspective, because it's based upon imperfect senses and the four defects of the conditioned soul. So Shabda Praman at least is established by Jiva Goswami as the best evidence. So that doesn't mean that we should accept it blindly. Even Shabda Praman, although it's evidence, but unless we hear it, we can't judge what it's talking about. Sometimes people, we have our books in our house, and we feel good about it, because although I don't know what's in the books, but at least they're there. They'll protect me. Prabhupada used to point out that the books are not just for distributing, they're also for understanding and studying. In other words, to judge what the praman is, we have to try to hear it, and then if we can't understand it clearly, then we have to inquire. And then, in order to realize it, we have to render service to it. We have to put it into practice. Then it is possible to understand it, what the praman is. And the principal praman is Srimad Bhagavatam. That, as it says, now that Krishna has left the planet, so Krishna, Krishne, Swadharma, Upagavate, Dharma, Jnana, Dabisaha, Kalo Nashta Drishamesha, Pararnarko, Dunoditaha. So now that Krishna has gone back to his own abode, where has knowledge and religion gone? Because Krishna, when Krishna went back to his own abode, he is the standard of knowledge. In the presence of Krishna, everything becomes clear. In the presence of Krishna, one can understand that one is, that's one's position as Krishna's servant. But in the absence of Krishna, then illusion takes over and we think ourselves to be the servant of this gross and subtle material bodies. Real knowledge means to understand one's relationship with Krishna, and real religion means ultimately to engage in Krishna's service. But when Krishna left, then people generally forgot that, just like when the sun goes away, then generally there's darkness. So that now that Krishna has left, kalo nashta drisham esha, kalo nashta drisham esham, now that people have lost their vision due to the darkness of Kali Yuga, where has these things found themselves? So pararnarako dunoditaha. The Srimad Bhagavatam is being presented so that people can get light from this Purana and understand reality. In other words, we say to understand Krishna. So the Bhagavatam gives us information about not only the Supreme Person, but the process of realizing Him. That He is the Supreme Person. Not that Narayan is the Supreme Person, not that the other incarnations of the Supreme Person, but ultimately that Krishna is the Supreme Person. So, we ourselves, we haven't even realized we're not this body. What to speak who Narayan is? Or any of the other incarnations? Therefore, it is not so simple that, yes, we officially accept Krishna as God. If there was a vote, we'd vote for Him. It's a question of actually realizing how Krishna is the Supreme Person, and how Narayan is also God, but he's not the supreme God. How the different incarnations, what their functions are, whether it be the Manvantaras, the Guna avatars, the Leela avatars, the Shaktivesh avatars, or Krishna in his form of Swayamrupa. To understand all these things, this is called knowledge, and there's so much to know. But ultimately, it's all to come to this conclusion that there is no one above Krishna. There's no one equal to Krishna, that Krishna is the Supreme Person. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna many times mentions this, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shasvatam Divyam Adi Devam Ajam Vibhu Ahustvam Rishaya Sarve Deva Shir Narada Sita Asito Devalo Vyasa Swayam Chaiva Bravishimit. That Krishna is the Param Brahma. He's the Supreme Brahman. He's the Param Dhamma. He's the Supreme Abode. Pavitram, the Purifier. Shasvatam, Divyam, the Eternal Divine Person. Adidevam, the Original Person. Adidevam, Ajam Vibhum. Ajam, Unborn, an Original Person. And what is his evidence that he puts forward? Ahustvam Rishaya Sarve. All the Rishis say this. Devala says this. Asita says this. Narada Muni says it. And now Krishna is also saying, confirming it. Of course, we don't even know who Devala is, what to speak of, who cares whatever he says. Or Asita, we don't even know who the person is. Narada Muni, we may have some idea, but we haven't personally met him, so. To accept his word on that Krishna is God. And then Krishna himself is declaring it. So, what do you expect? Everyone else is saying that they're God. So probably Krishna thinks he's God too. So this generally doesn't mean very much to the conditioned soul when he hears that Arjuna proclaiming that Krishna is God in Bhagavad Gita. And even Arjuna is supposedly seeing the universal form. In the 11th chapter, he says verses like, Pitasi lokyasya chara charasya pujas chagurar garyan garyan guru. Pitasi lokasya chara charasya pujas chagurar garyan garyan. What is it? Tvam asi pujas chagurar garyan. Garyan means glorious. Pitasi lokasya chara charasya Tvam asya pujas chag guror garyan netat samos yab yavi kat kuton yo loka trayap yat pratima prabhava. So this means that Krishna is the Tvam asya pujas pitasi. Pitasi means the father, lokasya, of the universe, pitasi lokasya characharasya, of the moving and the non-moving living entities. Tvam, you, tvam asya, pujas, worshipable, cha, gurur, garyan, the glorious spiritual master, the most glorious spiritual master. Natat, not, tvat swama, equal, Natat samos vya vyadika. Abhyadika means or greater than you. There's no one equal to or greater than you. Loka trayep yat pratima prabhava. Within the three worlds, you're the Lord of immeasurable power. So Arjuna is declaring all these things. Supposedly he's seen the universal form. So why should we accept any of this? In other words, why should we accept that Arjuna is actually personally telling us what he's seeing? Why should we accept what Narada Muni says? Why should we accept what Devala or Asita is saying? Why should we accept any of this? Does anyone know? Why don't we just accept this as someone's opinion or some mythology? Or why do we accept it and other people say that, you know, It was just some mythological book, the Mahabharata, full of all kinds of fairy tales and legends. Yes.
Someone accepts things which he can see that it works in his life, and he doesn't accept everything, but slowly by progress, he sees that other things are also lived, according to Shastra and Sadhu Shastra.
Yeah, so faith depends upon how much we've actually realized. So, if we start with the idea, yes, I accept Krishna as God, but on what basis? If someone says, on what basis do you accept Krishna as God? So, generally we should accept Krishna as on either the basis of direct experience, that we've chanted Hare Krishna and it made me enlightened and enlivened, and we've heard from Krishna, and what he says makes sense. In other words, Krishna has explained in Bhagavad Gita that we're not this body. So one who uses one's intelligence, one will be able to see from the beginning that it's a fact that there's a difference between the self and the body. So I'm a spirit soul. And then Krishna has explained that there is a God. So one who uses his intelligence will also be able to see that there is a controller beyond oneself. For instance, in this 11th chapter, Krishna said, Arjuna was asking Krishna, Agyahi me ko bhavan ugarupo, namosute deva vra prasida, vigyatam ichchama vantamadyam, nahi prajanami tava pravritim. O Lord of Lords, a refuge of the universe, please explain to me who you are. That I don't know what your mission is. I cannot keep my peace of mind. I can't even figure out what your mission is. So Krishna says, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kalosmi Loka Shaya Krit Pravrido, Lokansamahartami Ha Pravridak, Vitepi Tvam Nabra Vishanti Sarve, Yevasita Pratnu Ke Shiyoda. Krishna says, I am time, and I'm destroying all the worlds. So just by that statement, Krishna can say, we can see, or should be able to see, that there is an element called time within this universe, and everything is under time. Although we may consider ourselves to be very important and very special, or someone else as being very important and special. For instance, in Germany there was Adolf Hitler, and everyone thought he was very special. And before that, or in England at that time, there was Winston Churchill, and everyone thought he was special. And in America, there was President Roosevelt, and everyone thought he was special. But he wasn't. None of them were special enough to avoid the fact that time didn't think they were special. Time took everything away from them. Although they were given all honor and all facility by their followers, but the followers couldn't stop time from taking everything away from them. And similarly, not only time took everything away from them, but time is taking everything away from us. And time takes away everything from everyone. So time is all pervading, not only in this planet, but in all the planets. Everything is subjected to the ruling of time. So ultimately, by our own perception, we can see that time is supreme within this universe. That there is nothing superior to time, and that time is controlling everything. And nothing is controlling time. It is not one day we wake up and we read in the newspaper that today there's a big ceremony because time died. Time grew old, so old, and it passed away. And now time doesn't exist anymore, and everything's the same all the time. No, although time is changing everything, nothing is influencing or changing time. So time is not only beyond this material world, but it's controlling everything within the material world, and Krishna says that energy of time is me. Now we may not accept that energy of time is Krishna, but we have to accept there is an energy, a superior energy called time, under which everything is subservient, and which is all-pervading. Just like it is not that time is only existing in Radha Desh, but if you go to Brussels, there's no time there. Everywhere we go within the universe, time is all-pervading. So at least time has to be recognized as supreme. And under the influence of time, we can see that there are so many things that are going on, and they're not going on haphazardly. The example Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita is that there are planets moving their orbits on time. We can see that the sun arises at its appointed time, the sun sets its appointed time. So, although we may consider ourselves very intelligent, and we can manufacture things with precision, but no one can duplicate the precision that the sun's orbit is manifesting. Although we may try to build a watch to measure the movements of the sun, but whatever watch we build, even up to the atomic clock, is imperfect compared to the movements of the sun. So then the question is, since there's an energy called time changing everything, and it's changing everything very orderly, even more precisely than we can even duplicate, even the most intelligent person, therefore we can conclude that who's ever controlling the time factor must be more supremely supremely intelligent, more intelligent than anyone we have experience of. And intelligence implies a person. The dead material energy itself doesn't move with intelligence. It requires a person to move it with intelligence. Therefore, there must be a supreme person who's controlling everything through his energy, at least time within the material world. So who that supreme person is, Krishna is saying he's it. Now, we may not agree with it, but at least we have to also agree, if we're honest, that we're not it. There is a person controlling everything, and it's not anyone here that I know of, except for maybe up there. So we have to agree that we're not God, and that there is a God. Whether it's Krishna or not, that's another thing. But at least Krishna is saying, he's explaining these things. If you read other books, they don't explain these things. So, Bhagavad Gita at least is explaining that there is a God, he's controlling everything through his energies, we're not that God, and therefore it's the basic principles of spiritual life. Now to understand how Krishna is God, that requires in-depth study of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But at least if we accept the principles of Bhagavad Gita, we'll be able to understand with reason and logic and arguments that there is a God, and the way of approaching him is also explained. And with further study and reasoning and logic, one will be able to appreciate and accept the fact that the process must be through devotion. And then, if one further studies Srimad Bhagavatam with the logic, reason, and the evidence offered, one will be able to understand how, ultimately, the highest form of God is a cowherd boy in the spiritual world. But that cannot be done simply by blind following. Of course, we can blindly accept that Krishna is God, and that's not bad. But someone else will come along and cite some scripture or some evidence or some logic and bewilder us. So that's called Kanishta Adhikari. One who's easily swayed because his faith is not very firm. And therefore, as soon as there's some contrary argument, then one becomes bewildered. But for one who's logically understood things from the basic premises and has built his faith upon the evidences that are provided by the great acharyas through the scriptures and has understood things by logic, reason, and by practical experience, then can explain things and instead of becoming bewildered by contrary arguments, can not only understand the contrary arguments but can defeat them and reveal the actual truth, which according to the Bhagavatam is that Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. Narayan is not Bhagavan Swayam. Matsya Avatar is not Bhagavan Swayam. My grandmother is not Bhagavan Swayam. I'm not Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. And one who understands that, as it says here, as Srila Vyasadeva said earlier, bhakti yoga ena manasi samyak pranihite amalet apaishat purusham purnam maya chattara pashrayam. When Srila Vyasadeva sat down in meditation, when his mind became purified, bhakti yogena manasi, by linking it in devotional service, not just merely meditating, but with the proper devotional mood, following the orders of his spiritual master, Narada Muni, bhakti yogena manasi, samyak pranihite amale. When he linked it up within a pure state of consciousness, then he saw apaishat purusham purnam. He saw the Param Purusha, Krishna, along with Maya. But Maya was Maya Chattad Apashrayam. Although Maya was taking shelter of Krishna. Anyaya Samohito Jiva Atmanam Tri Gunatmakam Paropi Manyate Narata. Then the next word is Tatkritam Chapipadyate. Then he saw the living entities, ourselves, the jivas, and he saw that because we had taken shelter of Maya rather than Krishna, now we were misidentifying ourselves with this body and therefore thinking ourselves to have so many problems. Because everyone here, no matter how nice our bodies are, it's nothing but a bag of problems. Sorry to insult anyone, but... But the fact is that the body, everyone's body, it's not that, well, I have a body, it's strong and healthy, and I have so much money in the bank, and everything's all right with me. What's wrong with you? Why are you complaining? But this person now has a strong, healthy body. In 10, 15, 20, 50 years, his body won't be so strong and healthy, and his bank balance won't be able to save him. When the Yamadutas come and say, your time is up, he can't say, wait a second, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 50% of what's in my bank account. We'll split it. You accept bribes, right? You're part of the government. No, these things won't save us. That everyone is ultimately, their real problems is old age, disease, and death. And the only thing that will save them, or save any of us, Srila Vyasadeva said, is anarto pasamam sakshat bhakti yoga dharhokshujam lokasya janato vidvam chakre samhita samhita satvita samhita. Srila Vyasadeva saw that we have these anarthas that cause us to misidentify ourselves with this body, these unwanted conceptions, these unwanted habits. Therefore, because people in general are blind, they don't know how to get out of this misidentification, these bad habits. Therefore he gave Srimad Bhagavatam to enlighten us. And the enlightening factor, the most important thing, is to understand that who Krishna is and who we are in relationship to Krishna. The more we understand these things and accept it and act accordingly, then the more the illusory curtain of Maya is lifted. So one has to experience that. One has to understand it theoretically, and then one has to practice it to experience it, and those who actually come to experience it, then they become fixed in Krishna consciousness. So, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or challenges? Or... Yes.
Why do the scientists people feel that devotion is unscientific?
Because they're not very scientific. Science means a process. Of course, there, Krishna says, "Lokesmin dvivida nishta puro prokta mayanaga jnana yogena sankhyanam karma yogena yogina." There are two kinds of people who try to understand the self or the truth. One is by the process of karma yoga or devotional service. The other is by sankhya yoga or the analytical study, jnana yoga. So there's the path of philosophy and the path of devotion. But neither one of them in itself will produce the desired result. By accepting only one path without and rejecting the other path will simply create problems. Just like if one only accepts philosophy or science as evidence or proof and rejects practical application of that philosophy, putting it into a practical application, then it just simply becomes a dry philosophical argument. On the other hand, if one only accepts activities without it, not based upon philosophy, one only accepts one's, then it becomes fanaticism or sentiment. If one simply acts without understanding. So to only understand and not to act will simply result in dry speculation. And only to act and not to understand will simply result in sentiment or fanaticism. So the only real path is both to act, but with act with knowledge. And the knowledge should help us refine our sentiments to come to a higher state of happiness and a more broad understanding of things. But if our sentiments make us depressed, if they limit our understanding of things, we only see things in a more narrow vision, then that's improper or limited philosophy, which most people have. So real philosophy should help us broaden our perspective on things so that we can act in such a way as to act more in harmony with everyone and everything. And the result is that we should become progressively more enlightened and enlivened by our activities. So why are the scientists, why do they...
They see devotion as something unscientific.
Well, they're devoted to their speculations. They have their devotion, but it's very limited, that's all. So Prabhupada doesn't reject science. He says if you have science or if you have philosophy or education or culture, just dovetail that in the service of Krishna and everything will become perfect. So science is not rejected. But some narrow-minded science, idea of what science is, and devoting oneself simply to the bodily concept of life, without any possibility of understanding anything beyond that, that's rejected. But real science should be engaged to understand what the Supreme is, and who we are. That's real science. Not to find out what the atom is, spend $50 billion smashing an atom and seeing what comes out of it, and forgetting about who we are. That's just foolishness. So Prabhupada wanted scientists in our society to prove that Krishna is God, that we're not this body. Or we could say the scientists should prove that there is no God, that we are this body. Let them use their scientific method to try and do that, but not to smash an atom and try and see what comes out of it and spend $50 billion doing it. It's just a waste of time. Anything else? Do you have a question?
Somebody brought up and he mentioned that if you're not intelligent and you take shelter of someone who has intelligence, so would that be enough?
No. If you actually take shelter and gain some intelligence, taking shelter means taking shelter in such a way as to work and to get that intelligence. That's taking shelter. So taking shelter doesn't mean just officially taking shelter. You know, just like I have my guru, I'm officially initiated. Therefore, because he's so elevated, I become equally elevated just by the formal initiation. No, Prabhupada said the disciple is supposed to know everything the guru knows. So how does he find out everything the guru knows? It's not just by some kind of mystical process through the fire sacrifice when I threw the grains in, you know, all the knowledge was transferred to me. No, it's by following the process of the guru or following the instructions of the guru to come to the platform where one actually becomes Krishna conscious. So I'll understand things when I understand Krishna. So I can judge how much I've actually understood Krishna, and then I can see how much I've understood things. Not that I've taken shelter of someone, but I'm still in the same position I was before I took shelter. No, I've taken shelter, therefore my devotion, my consistency, and my depth of devotion has increased. That's taking shelter. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, When Nrsimhadeva offered him benedictions, he didn't accept them, but he did want the benediction that my devotional service will become more strong and steady. So that's a symptom of taking shelter. Is that right? But of course, if we have a question, then we can approach someone and try and get the answer so that we can apply it in our lives in a practical way. That's what it means to take shelter. To hear, try to understand, and then try to apply it. Doesn't mean because I have a particular, you know, body, therefore I can't become Krishna conscious. Now, everyone can become Krishna conscious if we just try to understand how to utilize the energies that we have and utilize them in Krishna's service. So, stani stita shuti gatam tanu vangmano bhira. Everyone could remain in their own position. Not that there is some unique position by which one can become Krishna conscious. In any position, one can become Krishna conscious. But he has to understand things properly so that one can utilize one's whatever body, mind, and words we have and utilize them in Krishna's service. If we're willing to do that, then Krishna reveals himself. Anything else? Yes.
Sometimes many people on Sankata, they become very angry with you. They get so infuriated if you try to explain to them. Like, I remember one man, I was trying to tell him about life of life, and he was quite offensive. I didn't spend too much time with him. But he couldn't handle it. Prabhupada was so sure of himself, and he thought that Prabhupada's arguments were primitive, and he was... So, of course, I didn't spend too much time with him because he couldn't hear very much. So is that anger also like part of its situation?
Yeah, obviously. They were so primitive, but he couldn't put forward any arguments to defeat them. All he could do is become angry. So from lust comes anger. From anger comes bewilderment to comes delusion. Comes bewilderment to memory. And then when memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. He probably got out of there in the nick of time. He got completely lost all his intelligence. I mean, what argument did he think was primitive?
He was saying that all these people just standing around whatever Prabhupada says, they're thinking it's so wonderful. And I said, well, it is wonderful. And he said, well, all the arguments are so primitive. And
which argument did he think was primitive?
Yeah, I was trying to
give
it to him, and so I don't remember
exactly
what was the argument. I thought, okay,
so he's already lost his memory, so it appears that he's pretty primitive. He can't even remember which argument. He's so advanced, he can't even remember which arguments were primitive. He's so sophisticated. He doesn't even have any memory. I'm sure that really warmed his heart. Then he thought for a minute and said, yes, I should read Bhagavad Gita to figure out why I'm so angry. I would have asked him, which argument do you think is so primitive? If you say, well, I can't remember, I say, well, go back and read it again, and we can discuss it.
I was intimidated by all that horrible emotions. That's why I was saying that emotion can be characterized above it.
Yeah, you just, you know, or else just go someplace else, obviously. You're not going to get anywhere. It's not the most pleasant association you can get. You know, I'm really relishing your association. Let me stay here and get some more.
Sorry about the tongue,
she was
suffering
so much. I wasn't anything I could do. Yeah, well, we could stay there and suffer alone. Thank you very much, Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Guru.